And our special guest tonight for the next couple hours, Craig Hewlett. I'm going to get Craig's take on a couple events that have been happening in this country. And then also we're going to talk about something that he has uncovered that just might knock your socks off. So get ready for Mr. Hewlett on Coast to Coast AM. Well, welcome back. If you've listened to this program at some length of time, you know that the author of The Hydra of Carnage, Craig Hewlett, has been a very special guest for me. He remains a paid analyst and consultant in various areas of geopolitical, business, and security issues, expert on terrorism. Of course, he worked for the late Jack Metcalfe, the retired congressman at the time, and he's been a consultant to federal law enforcement, the DEA, Homeland Security, for a number of years. Welcome back, Craig Hewlett. Craig, you've been working hard, I hear. How are you?
Well, I've been working hard, that's true, but it's all your fault.
I love it. I want to get your take on a couple things that have been happening in this country over the past couple months and then just recently, and then we'll get into this incredible story that you've discovered here that was just shocking to me. But I want your take on the Ferguson situation, Craig, if you can. The police officer who was not indicted, the grand jury felt they just did not have enough evidence to hold a trial. And the community has just gone up in arms. There were more protests today, very peaceful, very peaceful. They were around Clayton, Missouri, by the courthouse, going up and down the streets. But it has been violent before, and I think, of course, people from outside of the St. Louis area have come in, rabble-rousers, very disappointed in people like Al Sharpton doing what they're doing. But in this particular case, what's your take on this, your feeling?
Well, you know, we have a group of colleagues of mine. We call them clients because they actually pay me, but I consider them as much colleagues at this point after 25 years they've been with me. And one of them provides me with a system by which anything named George Jeb Bush in the political arena, I'll get every single story from all over the world where his name is mentioned.
Yeah.
At the same time, he also supplies me with, I don't know how he does it, with an application. I'm not that computer savvy. But I get every single report throughout the United States of every single police shooting, whether they're unarmed, whether they're felons, whether it's self-defense, or whether it's absolutely absurd. And I have to tell you, the number of police shootings has gone up dramatically. It's the most we've ever had this year, according to Justice Department statistics. The number of shootings of individuals unarmed or brutally beaten and unarmed, and very often completely innocent of any wrongdoing, has gone up, spiked to an incredible degree. And the militarization of police on just a regular scale, I don't have to talk to your audience about that. Everybody's fairly well aware of it.
Yeah.
So I think all of that plays into it. My problem is I'm beginning to get a real bad sense that there's two things going on in law enforcement. One, I get from people that I've worked with in law enforcement. For 25 years, I've worked with men at the federal level, DEA, ATF agents, Treasury. And these men became good friends to me. We're all almost like brothers, just like I was part of law enforcement with them, even though I never carried a badge. They all said the same thing as they got closer to retirement, that the new recruits coming in didn't look at the job the way they used to look at the job, guys my age. And the way they used to look at the job is they did look at it as coming into the community, protect and serve, trying to do good things and work to solve crimes and help people. All of them, to a man, has said to me that the new people coming in just don't feel that way at all. It's an entry-level job. They're not crazy about it as a career. They want to put in 15, 20 years and hopefully get out and find a real good job in security somewhere like Microsoft. And it's sad because what he's describing as well is the quality of personnel making up younger law enforcement has really dropped off. And the requirements to become law enforcement has really dropped off. I'm sure your audience is aware of the police officer that sued, who was told he couldn't become a police officer because his IQ was too high.
Yeah, yeah.
And he sued the law enforcement, and he lost. the courts ruled that, you know, no, that was a legitimate reason not to hire him. He's too intelligent.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of law enforcement people that are younger. It happens to go along with my job. And I think there is a rift in our community between quality policing and brutal policing, people that I don't think should even carry a badge. I know some people that shouldn't even have a badge. I've even written letters to a sheriff on occasion because I knew the individual applicant, and I would stress, do not hire this man. He will brutalize minorities. He's a dangerous person.
Oh,
he's trigger happy, and yet they hire him. And there's a lot of reasons.
Yeah. And that's dangerous. And you know, this latest episode in New York, a young man, not really a young man, but he was selling loose cigarettes, and gets into an altercation with police, and he ends up dying. They choked him, and he was asthmatic. He couldn't breathe. He ends up dying. I mean, this has just got to slow down. It's got to stop. I love police officers, Craig. They know it. Listening to this program, I support them 99.9% of the time. But some of these cases are just out of control.
I know a lot of law enforcement listen to your show because they came up to me at a meeting I recently held about a subject we'll talk about later. Over 200, 250 people showed up at a meeting where I was on a panel to debate the Navy over a different issue. After the show, a half a dozen police officers came up to me and shook my hand and thanked me because they listened to George Nuri.
Well, they're good people. But, you know, what are we going to do with this nonsense? I mean, so he's selling loose cigarettes, doesn't have a license for it, and now he's dead.
Okay, there used to be a theory. There used to be a theory, a general theory, that if the crime you were committing wasn't a capital crime that would get you the death penalty, the officers would do everything possible not to pull their gun and shoot you. But that theory's out the window. I get a sense from what again, these are retired officers with a lot of experience. Younger officers aren't going to talk to me because I'm a public figure. They're not going to discuss anything with me. And a lot of them, the depiction I get from other officers that are older or retired is, and I hate to use an unkind word, and this is not general at all. This is the bad apple scenario. Some officers shouldn't be carrying a gun and a badge because they are, in fact, bullies. And bullies are always cowards, and cowards are always bullies. That's just a simple biological function of the nature of a person that's a bully. And it isn't a coincidence that a lot of these men committing these atrocious acts against innocent people, including young kids. I've seen videotapes of a 275-pound police officer, clearly way overweight, with his knee on the neck of a 12-year-old because it's stripping the 12-year-old of a skateboard, and then throwing the skateboard across the street and saying foul things to this young man, and say, if you don't like it, I'll go talk to your mother next. I've seen horrible things in these YouTube videos, and I do believe there's a small element of the police that are predatory. I think they're looking for a fight. They want to fight. Do they really want to shoot somebody? I think that comes up during the fight. I don't think they maybe start out looking to shoot somebody.
Right.
But when you're in an altercation and you're not a courageous, disciplined, well-developed, disciplined officer with hand-to-hand combat training that can defend yourself, if you find yourself in an altercation and you have a little bit of that, I don't like that word cowardice, but lack of faith in your own abilities to defend yourself, then you're likely going to pull your gun.
And that may be the case here in Ferguson, Missouri.
I think so. I mean, the kid was a very large young man. He was an athlete. Clearly, he could dance, and he could be fearsome. And the officer was a small man, white, probably a bigot. I wouldn't doubt it. That you know, would have to play into it.
Yeah, but we don't know
what,
that.
What the young man did either.
No,
I think you've got two sides of a really bad situation.
I called it the perfect bad storm for an event.
It was. But at the bottom line is, okay, maybe he wasn't indictable. Maybe there wasn't enough evidence to indict him. You know, I'm not a lawyer. I didn't sit in the grand jury, but I will say this. I don't think a police officer has any right to shoot anybody in the back. Ever. Under any conditions. If you're a good enough shot to put, you know, four rounds in a 10-inch target at 50 feet, then you can clearly, you know, shoot him in the legs. You can put him down. And if you've already shot him, how far is he going to get?
And why don't they have these kinds of tasers that look like little batons?
They do, actually. The cops are carrying all kinds of non-lethal weaponry on their gear. They got full battle rattle with tons of that stuff. Easily they could have done that. But as we saw with Rodney King, they had him on the ground handcuffed. They tased him six times, and they still just beat him with nightsticks because they wanted to. They just wanted to.
And
there
it was
are,
wild.
Not just bad apples. I believe it's really becoming something that I think the police chiefs associations need to address this. There's something wrong at a certain level where police are becoming conveniently exercisable in violence at a level that's completely inappropriate, and it's too free up out there, using the language of Vietnam.
Yeah, something's happening, Craig, and that is the $64,000 question. What is going on in this country to create these police officers who are in tough situations? What's creating the tension to allow them to do what they do? I got to tell you, I am sure Darren Wilson, when he woke up that morning, didn't say, I'm going to shoot somebody today. I think, again, it was a perfect storm of a horrible event that he got caught up on, that the kid got caught up on, and both of them couldn't get out of the situation the right way.
I think that's the best explanation I've heard to date, and I agree with it 100%.
So now
that's
you
not
have
apologia by any stretch.
I understand. I'm saying you have stumbled across a story that I almost couldn't believe when I was talking to Lisa today.
It's your fault, and I
know it was. So tell us what happened and what the heck is going on.
Well, I got an email out of nowhere from one of your listeners, and she tracked me down because I live in a place called Quinault on the Olympic Peninsula in northwestern corner of the United States. It's a rainforest, an old ancient growth rainforest, and the Quinault Indian Nation and the Ho Nation of Indians all have reservation land up here. A lot of wildlife, wilderness area, a lot of endangered species in the area. And this woman emailed me because she had just found out about what is referred to as the Pacific Northwest Electromagnetic Warfare Range Environmental Assessment. And what it is an assessment was done by the Navy, an assessment, which is a way of sidestepping an environmental impact study. An assessment is written up, hopefully, so they don't have to go any further. And she asked me to look into it. And I don't do local issues. I've never done local issues. So I looked into it for her because she was one of your listeners, and what I discovered was the Navy and the Forest Service were combining and violating federal law by not telling the public, and they by law have to tell the public when they're planning to do something like this, to open up an electromagnetic warfare training range covering almost the entire Olympic Peninsula. And on the other side of the Puget Sound, into the mountains over on the other side, the same huge area, same wilderness-type area, over near what would be called eastern Seattle or Everett, Snohomish County, the same thing. And what they're doing is they want to set up an electromagnetic training range for the Navy to use jets, F-35s, which are called Growlers.
Mm-hmm.
These are the jets that fly in front of B-1 bombers or any other kind of strike force, Air Force or Navy Strike Force. They fly in front of it, and when they pick up an electromagnetic beam being shot at the fighter planes to disrupt their radar or avionics or electronics, they go in and they destroy that. They take it out. That's what these pilots do. Now, besides the noise pollution that comes with something like this, this is the part that really troubled me. When I read the study, it's 228 pages. Only 8 pages of that study was devoted to health issues. Now, I wasn't an expert on electromagnetic waves or the weapon systems, but I tend to get up to speed pretty quick. And as I looked at the health issues that were outlined in their own study, and if you read it, you have to read these. This is a lot of gobbledygook in the studies, but they tended to dismiss the health issues by saying there's no data that suggests that there's a health issue.
And they're probably right. There is no data. Nobody's tested it, probably.
Yeah, that's the problem, because from a legal standpoint, and this is the rub, from a legal standpoint, the public doesn't have to prove that it's unsafe. By law, by World Health Organization, by federal law, by case law, and I've got two attorneys that have been helping me with this, unfortunately, the onus is on the Navy and the Forest Service to prove that it is, beyond a scientific analysis doubt, without a doubt, it's safe. They have to demonstrate that it's safe, or the World Health Organization and our own federal laws dictate don't do it until you can prove it's safe. Now, when you look into electromagnetic weapons, this isn't radar from World War II. This stuff has evolved, and that's how the Navy wanted to portray it to the public, is we're not doing anything that your grandfather didn't do during World War II. And that's how they would leave it. Yeah. If you didn't know how to ask the right questions and do the research, you'd be dumbfounded. You'd look silly and paranoid that you're nervous and scared about some technology you're ignorant of. But the opposite's true. There is nothing but evidence out there, mostly in Europe, France, Germany, Great Britain, and not too little right here in the United States, saying that not only is electromagnetic, as an electromagnetic RF signal, dangerous and a health hazard, but so is Wi-Fi, cell phones, cell towers, everything you can think of that there is all considered electromagnetic. But the interesting part here is these are, according to a General Doolittle, who was at an electromagnetic conference, he said, he stood up in front of the entire conference and said, all right, can everybody stop talking about enablers and emitters? Can we start calling these what they are? They're fire. And what he means by fire in Army language is it's fire, like artillery shells, bombs, bullets.
It's grenades. A weapon.
These are weapons. Make no mistake, these are weapons. And all the technology that's there to disrupt a signal, that's the lowest level of the technology. But the technology itself has the ability to do unbelievable damage to human beings, and most specifically, my research turned up, children. And this outfit up here in this Navy, they wanted to propose a fixed tower 40 feet above the ground. It looks like a big golf ball from a distance. And it's 2,000 feet from an elementary school. And they're actually trying to convince, we actually held the meeting to debate the Navy, specifically at that elementary school. And five people from the Navy showed up, myself and a little old lady from Fish and Game, retired. We were the only two opponents. We were a little outgunned.
Huh.
But we also knew how to ask the right questions, both of us. She did a tremendous job. Her report is on my website. Her name is Karen Sullivan. She did an amazing job taking the Navy apart for lying and breaking federal law and not informing the public of this. Now, this is the real bad part.
Oh, boy.
I assume still that this was just a local issue. But I asked a question of one of the Navy representatives. The mobile emitters...
Hold on for a second. Craig, hold on. We're already at the break, but we'll get right into this when we come back. Well, as you know, we have a Holiday Magic Coast-style CD out there. It is truly remarkable. A number of coast-to-coast guests, Pat Boone, the noted singer, Billy Gibbons, donated their songs, their voices. I did a song. We just had a great time to help benefit veterans' charities. And if you're interested in picking up the CD before the holiday season, just go to our website, coasttocoastam.com, look at the highlight reel, click it, and it'll take you straight to Amazon.com, where they are setting up the purchase of this CD. Lots of great comments about it. So just take some time, go to our website, and sign up to pick up the Holiday Magic Coast Style CD. And welcome back. Craig Hewlett with us. We're talking about a brand new electromagnetic weapon system. Craig, you said it gets worse. What happened?
Well, as I was looking into it, the Army, I mean, the Navy was proposing it, saying it was going to be cost savings and they were going to save on fossil fuel. They specifically said fossil fuel rather than just fuel, gasoline, jet oil, fuel, whatever, to make it sound like this was an environmental issue that they were trying to help us all out with. And everybody knows that these planes, especially jets and fighter bombers, they jettison more fuel than you can possibly imagine on a regular basis before they land, especially landing on aircraft carriers. They jettison most of their fuel. So if there is an accident, they don't go up in flames. So the fossil fuel savings was a joke. But let me explain how this thing is being set up. They have mobile units that drive around throughout the rainforest in different locations. The Forest Service tells them which back roads and territory they can park them in. And then they set up the mobile unit, and it directs the electromagnetic beam out into the air for the growlers to pick up in a training exercise. They move them around 260 days out of the year, anywhere from 4 to 12 of them every single day, almost year-round. They're driving these things around, parking them, setting them up, and then discharging, emitting the electromagnetic wave. I asked them during the debate, and again, they didn't want to talk about anything unless you asked them a specific question. They would simply not say anything. So I asked them, well, these people that are driving around in these mobile emitters, what rank are they? Are they E1, E4, E5, officers involved? And they all looked a little startled. And they said, well, actually, no military personnel are involved. We're going to be using private security contractors, i.e. unaccountable to the Congress, the Pentagon, anybody. Huh. Contractors, civilian contractors. Now, to determine exactly who that might be, I looked up on the Internet and made myself apply for the job as a technician using electromagnetic weapon systems. And a corporation called BAE is the largest supplier of those civilian contractors. It's a British and American-owned corporation. While I was researching to find out as much as I could about the personnel that would be operating this equipment, I discovered that, well, guess what? This isn't just happening in the great Northwest and near the Indian Reservation and where I live. It isn't going to be a personal thing. They're actually doing this in 17 states in the country, all up and down the borders, the East Coast, West Coast, and the Southern Coast, in every military base you can think of. Elgin Air Base, Fort Hood, Fort Irwin, San Bernardino, they're at NAFTU Air Force Base in Sacramento, San Antonio, and they're enlarging and expanding all of these bases in this area of electromagnetic emissions and weapon systems training, all along the borders. And in right now, 17 states that I've been able to identify, that's just looking at the hiring patterns of one of the security contractors that would deploy the personnel to participate in the training for the Navy. So then it occurred to me, well, this is a nationwide project using technology that everywhere I've looked, this technology is a weapon system in and of itself. Yes, it's used by countries like China and Russia. They have it. And if we were trying to bomb the Russians in the Black Sea area or the Chinese, they would have these same type of emitters, and then our growlers would go in and defeat them, identify them and defeat them, so our bombers would be able to go in and bomb China or Russia. But all of this training previously used to be done in places like White Sands, Aberdeen, Arizona, the deserts in Nevada, those type of military bases where there were no people, there were no animals, there was no wilderness area and endangered species. and no large population density or Indian tribes. So it occurred to me, this is getting a little strange.
It is
and
weird.
Now I'm getting a little uncomfortable. Because, again, and all of this, everything I'm telling you is on my website. On the very first page, the very top page of my website, I've got 14 documents, a couple of YouTube videos of experts from Europe discussing these matters. I've dissected the lethality of it, its effects on human beings, and how they use these systems. They could turn them around and use them at any time, in any capacity they wish. It doesn't just have to be its use as a training device. They are deploying systems that can be used at any time, anywhere, as a weapon system. Everything from crowd control, and believe it or not, the Army has three field manuals, FM manuals, out already discussing the use of electromagnetic microwave technology, not just for crowd control, but crowd dispersal. They call it an active denial system. And the most recent active denial system was deployed in Iraq, and it was recalled within 6 months because the bloody thing wasn't denying people. It wasn't breaking up gatherings and protests or rioters. It was killing people. It was toasting them like a microwave oven. That's the kind of burns you get from this.
What does this thing look like? How big is it?
It's not that big. They used to be really big and silly looking, and they were, you know, clearly identifiable. And maybe that's why they never deployed them in a residential area or a densely populated area in the past. Now they actually can disguise them to look like sort of like a camper on the back of a pickup truck, and then they just drive it off in the woods, unload the equipment, deploy it. It sets up to 14 feet. And it's just this little package on the top of it that deploys the beam. Now, they say in the document itself, if wildlife come around, like a herd of elk, or if they see campers in the area or hikers, the people that are with the mobile units will immediately shut the system down, dismantle it, and move to a different location.
And they'll do it quickly. Hey, by the way, I did want to correct you on one thing. Michael Brown was not shot in the back. He had 6 to 7 shots, but everything was from the front.
Oh, okay. And,
okay, I just want to make sure.
I was probably looking at several other...
There were early reports from witnesses that he was shot in the back, but once the autopsies were done,
okay,
he was shot in the front.
But he was shot 6 times.
He was shot 6 or 7, something like that. Okay, but anyways, this device, why are they out there in the woods testing this thing?
Well, they're saying that it's to save cost and fuel, and when I engaged the Navy in the discussion, pretty much what they started having to admit to is we're deploying them closer to the military bases on the coast because it's more convenient for the personnel, so we don't have to fly to places like White Sands and train. And my attitude was, go to White Sands and train. There's no people there. There's no wildlife there. But of course, that's not going to hold. I believe there's a twofold reason. I don't know if you're familiar with this, but the ACLU has done a great deal of work with Freedom of Information Act, trying to identify why the federal law enforcement agencies under Homeland Security are freely using their legal powers to search, seize laptops, iPhones, search your vehicle, all along the borders, all along the Mexican border, the Canadian border, and all along the coast. And what they uncovered through the Freedom of Information Act is there was a new theory out of Homeland Security that within a 100-mile distance from our borders is a designated non-constitutional zone, that the Constitution does not apply because of the national emergencies this country is living under because of the war on terror. So if you live within 100 miles of the coast or the border of Canada and Mexico, then your constitutional rights do not apply as they do within the rest of the country. Now, if you look at a map in which I've outlined, you know, where these bases are either expanding or being newly deployed, you find that it runs from now almost to Canada, where I'm at, Quinault, way up here in the Olympic Peninsula, all the way south to San Diego, across Texas, Arizona, and the Gulf Coast, all the way then up to Maine, all within that 100-mile area of the border.
Mm-hmm.
Now, all of these mobile units that they're deploying in these different areas, if you followed my work and others, whereby the military is now authorized to intervene, take over for a sheriff, a governor, and they could deploy military force by any regular base commander within the area. In other words, if there's a riot in Grays Harbor County, the area commander closest would be McCord Air Base or Fort Lewis. That commanding officer can then deploy U.S. military personnel and whatever military equipment is necessary to put down a civil disobedience or a riot or whatever is taking place domestically. Posse Comitatus is out. It's history. This is all the law of the land. The documents about it are published, again, on my website. You can find them there.
And they'll implement whenever they have to. They've got it all over the place. Are these in sporadic areas around the country or just in your region?
No, they're not sporadic at all. They're in Florida. They're at Fort Hood, Texas, Fort Irwin, San Bernardino, Sacramento, California, San Antonio, there are North Carolina, South Carolina, all the states on the border. These military bases are either converting, expanding, or newly introducing this technology in these training scenarios. Now, it doesn't take a genius to figure out that, you know, I don't think anybody's planning a great conspiracy to use these weapons against the American people. But the laws have changed. And if you're not aware of it, you know, I'm very sorry you're not aware of it, but Posse Comitatus does not exist any longer. It simply doesn't exist. There's two documents on my website that make it abundantly clear. One of them is called a Department of Defense Directive for Defense Support of Civil Authorities. It was issued December 29th, 2010, and it incorporated changes on the 21st of September, 2012. This is all pretty new, but this particular directive makes the military commander nearest, wherever there's civil disobedience, if that commander feels the governor or the sheriff is not doing his job and putting down the riots or the civil disobedience, whatever it is, he can deploy his own troops, move in, and take over the region. He does not need National Guard approval, White House, or the governor's approval. This is a Pentagon directive.
Would they shoot, or would they just flip this machine on and render people down to their knees?
These are considered non-lethal weapons. That's why, you know, a lot of people don't feel threatened at it if they first come across it. When this was first introduced in this area, it wasn't called electromagnetic. It was called electronic warfare. And they didn't explain to the public in any meetings what that meant. You had to be aware that electronic warfare encompasses something different. And when you go through it and you look at what it is, now you realize it's electromagnetic warfare training. It's a completely different animal. This isn't about radar. This is a weapon system. And like General DuPont said, it's a fire system. Stop calling it a denial system or an enabler or an emitter. It is a weapon system. We can adjust that system to make you uncomfortable, make you have tingly feelings, noise in your ears, ringing in your ear. They can make you sick, vomit, pass out, collapse. It can fry the water under your skin without burning you until you're screaming in pain. And in many cases, these active denial systems, I'll repeat, when they were deployed in Iraq and Afghanistan, they had to be withdrawn because they were not non-lethal. They killed people.
You know,
when I say killed people, it's a fairly hideous death. With the burns that you get from an electromagnetic pulse is the same thing as being on the inside of a microwave. It's not like a bad sunburn.
No, you're cooking from within.
You're cooking from within. You're literally boiling the flesh underneath your flesh, the water underneath your flesh. And, of course, you know, then as I kept looking into this further and further, I found all these field manuals discussing using it as a weapon to be deployed to make people behave differently. And there's the language is incredibly confusing, but it's, they say that the Army is using it, not the Navy. The Army is using it in this case. These same weapon systems can be deployed and be used, in their view, to change your mind, to change your thinking, to derail your activity by causing you to become confused, to short-term memory loss, to make you feel ill all the time, like you have allergies and illness. And in other words, if there's a whole area or community that's misbehaving, they can go in and really disrupt your life to the point the Army believes, this isn't my belief, this is their own field manuals, they believe that they can change and alter your behavior to be more conducive to the military's desires, even if you're an active adversary. They believe they can control you. Not literally control your thoughts, but at some point, that's being discussed as well, that they can put words and language in your head. In other words, what I've discovered is this technology is completely out of control, and the military, the Pentagon, and DARPA are completely out of control in how they want to deploy this. And the American people haven't got a clue that this is going on, except the worst fringe elements of the conspiracy theory world. They're the only ones I've noticed actually has picked up on it because of MK Ultra, mind control, JFK assassination, Jim Mars's work, those kinds of things. So actually, the wackiest people out there on MK Ultra and conspiracy theories, they were actually closer to the truth than I was.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. That, I mean, do you actually think it could be implemented right now if they needed it?
Oh, they could do it right now if they needed it, yes. Yeah, the technology is already in hand. BAE is building the vehicles, supplying the personnel, and in 17 states that I know of to date. That's just one company. What I did is I posed myself as a technician that works on these systems, built my resume, and then I went and shopped myself, and BAE turned up as the largest corporation out of England and America, hiring people all over the nation. And that's how I found out that this isn't just in the Olympic Peninsula. It's in 17 states that BAE is active. Now, again, I've only been doing this for 30 days because of you, George.
Thank you. I did that to you. You know, Linda Moulton Howe, our reporter, has been reporting on strange sounds all around the country. I wonder if this machine emits that.
It does. In fact, it has an active audio weapon system. They do have, it's called an acoustic denial system.
Yeah, people are hearing
this. You can barely hear it, but you'll hear it in a way that'll kind of like drive you nuts. But you'll hear it, but not actually hear it. You'll be looking at each other going, do you hear that? And you go, I'm not sure. What is that?
Yeah, it's just in there.
But
Craig, we're going to come back
in there
and take some phone calls with you next on Coast to Coast AM.